good morning, everybody. My name is Vance Holmquist, and I'm at Oregon State University. I'm working on my PhD, and yeah, so let's just get started. So today I'm going to be talking about the soil production function, kind of what it is, and why we should care about it. And so, of course, because we're in a critical zone talk, I thought I had to include the slide about the critical zone, but namely, like, how it's related to what I'm talking to you about today. So kind of this definition that the critical zone is where a rock meets life. And what does that mean when rock is meeting life? What happens? And so the critical zone was developed in part because there was this significant interest in the biologically mediated responses of the landscape, the biologically mediated landscape responses in general. And so that's kind of these interactions between biology and geomorphology. In a lot of these attempts to kind of figure out what's going on within this so-called critical zone, where you have all of these dynamically interacting things, in our attempts to basically model those, we need some constraints. We need to know, I'm not sure if this is allowed, but we need some constraints to basically constrain these surficial processes. And so this hill slopes or the soil production function in some ways works on that. And I guess at this point it's maybe also helpful to note that this production function basically is working to resolve some of these intermediate timescale issues that we're dealing with. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later. So some recent work, and this is just an example, and this is published, I think, in 2014 or 15, and this is basically done hill slope soils and vegetation, mostly looking in really arid systems, namely in the Atacama. And they go on to say basically erosion rates with no soil mantle are lowering at a consistently lower rate, meaning that you're kind of needing some soil to actually denude the surface of the land. And this is kind of consistent with this humped soil production function. And you might be wondering, what is the humped soil production function? And before that, I should say, I'm going to define a couple of terms. The first thing is, what is soil production? And it's kind of different from how we as pedologists would think about it. In the geomorphic sense, it's simply the liberation of materials to be moved. It's the creation of mobile materials or the mobilization of materials. And denudation is the physical lowering of any spot on Earth's surface. It's kind of akin to erosion in some way. And so when I talk about denudation, I just mean lowering. And then there's regolith, so just the loose material. It can be alluvium, it could be colluvium. It could be just fractured bedrock to some extent. And so that's just loose lithologic paramaterials. So the soil production function, it kind of has some historical roots. It goes back at least to a word picture of G.K. Gilbert's, where he describes this sort of you need money to make money concept of, you know, and it's actually in his famous monograph on the Henry Mountains. He talks about he thinks that for the land to erode as fast as it can, you kind of need some soil to hold on to moisture and for plants, actually. You need plants to do a lot of that, the work of, you know, turning rock into smaller particles that can actually move. And so he says you need a little bit of soil to actually do this fastest. And this is the concept of the hump production function. And so that goes back to like the late 1800s. And it kind of entered into just, you know, the consciousness of soil geomorphologists and pedologists at that time. And then by the 1970s, this kind of concept was revisited with modeling efforts to kind of look at landscapes. And when they did some modeling, mostly on Earth, did some modeling exercises, they're like, oh, hey, there's this sort of bimodality that emerges. You have either the landscape with soil or a landscape without soil, but you don't really have this, you know, thinning. You don't have like some thin and continuous soil. And so they said, oh, well, let's go see if we can find this on the landscape. And they kind of failed to find it, they thought. They never found this extreme bimodality that they thought they would find. And so instead, they opted for an exponential production function, which says that bare rock is converted to soil at the fastest rate. And actually, I should say that this has largely been the focus of geomorphologists. And so actually the soil production function is kind of one of those things that, for those of you who are in the awards banquet, Dr. Weil was talking about some of these soil issues or questions pertaining to soils that are largely the focus of other disciplines. This is one of those. And so, Yeah, so we've got basically these two geometries of the function exponential, the humped there on the left, and then on the right it's kind of a conceptual diagram of what it means to produce regolith in soil production, and I kind of included a little arrow to say most of this is being determined through in situ cosmogenic radionuclides, basically the accumulation of these special nuclides that, you know, it's a function of some depth. There's a lot in there, but anyway. So I guess, I titled this Hill Slope Strains in the Soil Production Function, but it's a slight misnomer because I realized I only had 13 minutes. So I have the one slide here, and this kind of describes the important parts of why this hill slope production function is important. Namely, hill slopes are providing kind of a blind gravitational potential for material to move downslope and, you know, kind of create this, not really a vacuum, but basically fresh rock can be brought to the surface and vected upwards. So hill slopes are kind of this gravitational potential. Streams are the lower boundary, kind of conceptually in this, removing material from the system in a sort of conveyor belt-esque way. I mean, at least this is like the conceptual model. And then there's also some dissolution of the material. So this is how denudation occurs. It's, you know, some conveyor belt of physical material and then solutional loss. And uplift is not necessarily required for this, but you definitely need a topographic gradient for this production function to actually mean much. And I guess this is, again, it's critical for us, for our understanding of how landscapes are actually responding to external geomorphic drivers like falls in base level or tectonic drivers of topographic gradients. Basically, for us to understand these intermediate timescales between our short-term measurements of like dissolved loads or bed load fluxes, something like this, versus our long-term observations of, you know, crustal warping, we kind of need to resolve that with these intermediate timescale phenomena. And this diffusion of the rock across the landscape is the soil production function. And so I guess a little bit of a background why I'm thinking about this, and I totally cut a slide and now I'm regretting it. It's a picture of the site, but this is like a catena that I was presenting last year of some work that I was doing in Central Oregon, where we basically have this landscape that's downwind of the Cascadian volcanoes, and we dug this catena and basically found that there's this strange stratigraphy at the site. And I was kind of doing a lot of reading at the time, trying to figure out what I'm going to be doing my research on, and so I'm thinking about the soil production function, and especially the bimodality, because in Central Oregon, in this particular region, there's a whole terrain called the Scab Stringer terrain, and whoa, it's what's going on with it sort of thing. And it is kind of classically the bimodality. It's forests juxtaposed to nearly bare knolls. And they're not entirely barren, but, you know, I kind of thought, oh, this might be that bimodality that they're looking for. And in this, at least in this stratigraphy, it seemed like we had this frequent, well, not really frequent, but we basically had these layers of mobilized regolith that would stack one on top of another in a sort of transgression-like record. And so we thought, oh, well, this might be very similar to, like, ecotone transgression. And associated with each time a new volcanic ash deposit comes in, trees actually have enough plant-available water that they can move up into locations that formerly had soils too thin to support them. And then as they colluvially, more or less, move everything down through their life and death, we basically have this stratigraphy that's recorded. And so our explanation is down below, you know, it's this water, and it's kind of akin to climate modulation. Because throughout that period of time, this is a mesama ash that's like 7,000 years old, so more or less climate has been relatively similar in Central Oregon since then. And so we're not necessarily seeing climatological periglacial processes or anything like that. And so this might be the instability of the hump soil production function. And so some time went by, and I wanted to continue some work on that. So namely, I wanted to figure out, well, mathematically, what are the characteristics of this proposed function? And if we can figure out what the mathematical characteristics are, can we develop some sort of a proxy that would allow us to globally figure out how soil is being produced? And so the soil production function is here in italics up top. It's basically got some soil production rate as a function of the overlying depth of soil. The S-naught is the zero soil production rate, so how fast soil is being produced with no soil cover. And then we have alpha and beta, these fitting parameters, which that's kind of the question of this talk, actually. And so I've got this sort of surface here, and we've graphed it. You know, you can see this is holding beta constant, but we're moving through alpha for some depths, and then we've got some fractional soil production rate. And you can see it, well, I hope you can see, that it takes on both humped geometries and exponential geometries, depending on the value of alpha. So the question is, does alpha vary for the same spot on Earth's surface through time? Ooh, I'm running out of time. So that's the question. Do they have physical ontological significance? Are they biophysically relevant? Oh my gosh, I have 3 minutes. Okay, so I basically produced a literature compilation of all of the global soil production rates that have been published using cosmogenic radionuclides. Almost all of them are on granitic lithology. And then I fit humped soil production functions to them using just the minimization of squared errors. I used an intercept of one because not all of them have a clear intercept. And then that was compiled along a suite of other calculations associated with the same site. Namely, we've got, we have several populations, but namely New Zealand and the Atacama are kind of like these weird outliers, and I don't have time to talk about that. So, the alpha and beta biophysical significance question. So here I've got three different plots. The two on the right are showing some basically typical types of functions and how they've been fitted from a couple of the studies, along with their parameter values. But the really important graph here is the one that's on the bottom right, or bottom left, and that is the aridity index plotted against the ratio of alpha to beta. And in particular, the literature is saying that when you have your ratios approaching 1, you essentially have an exponential function. But in this case, I've plotted the aridity index and those values to their ratio, and we've got a pretty decent correlation with a power law fit. This is in log-log space. But it's not entirely linear, which suggests a little bit more complexity, but it's not unexpected, and there are actually really good Zipf's laws and things like that that describe this, and I think that's actually really important to follow up on. The important part of this is that there does appear to be an environmental signal present in the function, meaning that the degree of humpedness, if you will, on the landscape is some function of the environmental parameters at the site. So does that mean that we can actually develop a proxy? I think it might, but I'm not sure. But returning to the Ochoco, I just kind of plotted what that function would look like given today's mean annual precip and mean annual temperature. And speculating what that might mean in terms of if we actually stacked the ash depositions on top of this underlying function, and I think it would produce a broader peak. I'm realizing that I ran out of time. So, conclusions. Fitted values of alpha and beta appear to have some correlation with mean annual temperature, mean annual precip, meaning that I think a proxy for figuring out globally, especially using our global aridity index values that are available, might be possible. The correlation is not perfect, of course, in log-log space, but I think that's consistent with this biological conception of Zipf's law, maybe. And the slide Mount Katina is kind of consistent with the humped soil production function. So I guess with that I'll end and say thank you very much, acknowledge everybody, and yeah, I don't know if I have time for questions, I'm sorry. Oh, do I?
We have one question.
Oh, great.